Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I am Tom Takar, the Wolf of Dog Street, as always, joined by the Prince of Snarkness himself, Tommy McNamara. How are you, Tommy?
Doing very well. Doing very well. Excited for today. It's a big tables have turned.
This is a weird one. Frankly, I think we should go ahead and plug anything we want to plug up top because I think we're going to lose a lot of people quick. we are joined, of course, by friend and foe of the podcast, the owner of the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana, co-founder of the Limestone Comedy Festival. Now joined by Dwight Simmons, and along with, of course, Matt Alonzo Morning. And, that is Jared Thompson, of course. How are you today, Jared?
Good. You mispronounced, creator of this podcast.
Here's the thing. I meditated this morning. I knew you were going to do this. I knew this was coming. I prepared myself and I'm not angry. Okay. I just want to talk about this right up top. I want to get right to it. So Jared thinks he came up with this podcast because he hates music. And that is, in his mind, enough to have a show. And if that were a podcast, it would be the worst fucking podcast. And that's what we're doing today. So,
I could not do a podcast. So I'm with you that it would be bad.
You were talking about is just you shitting on the music that everybody likes. That's not what the show is. It's literally the opposite of that.
Well, one of these, I was thinking of doing this at your funeral, which, of course, I won't live longer than you. So this wouldn't work anyway.
I think you might, given how I
have
been living.
I have the Comedy Attic bugged, and I have audio of what happened back then, of us talking about this, of coming up with it. And what I said was that, you know, we should do a podcast where somebody defends bands and music that most people think are bad.
Here's the thing. I had the club bugged myself. Oh, I double bugged it. And here's a little clip of Jared pitching the podcast. I hate all the bands that weren't around when I was young. Good audio. Anyway, before we get into the premise of today's show, there's some breaking news in the music world. Tommy, take it away.
It's me, Walter Couric, and I'm here to tell you about the breaking news. We have Smash Mouth. So last week we talked about how in the Hamptons there was a Chainsmokers concert,
yes,
which was opened, of course, by DJ Diesel, mm-hmm, the CEO of Goldman Sachs. And we had the exact opposite thing in music this week, which is that Smash Mouth. First, we had this exclusive party in the Hamptons. Then this week we have Smash Mouth playing to a bunch of bikers, none of them wearing masks, hundreds of bikers at this rally in South Dakota. And apparently, Smash Mouth frontman Steve Harwell said, "We're all here together tonight. Screw that COVID expletive." What do you guys think that expletive was?
It's got to be COVID shit, correct?
Goodness. I think it was goodness.
Screw that COVID goodness.
Screw that COVID fuck hat, or like,
yeah, right,
or like, yeah, what's the sort of expletive a guy like that would use? I mean, it's probably something offensive if it's not shit, but Jared, what's the sort of thing you would put there?
Well, so basically, let me just say this, that only people dumber than somehow anyone who currently listens to Smash Mouth are the people that were at this thing, so they had to basically trick bikers into having anyone go to their concert. Like, there's no way that if they announce a concert, no one would go. But they were like,
so
well, now we can go, we can just play in front of all these people and say that we played in front of actual people. Because I bet you if they came to Bloomington, they would probably play the Bluebird and it would probably be like half full, I bet.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, Bluebird, there's a cover band that packs the place out every week.
Right, but you have to keep in mind the tickets would probably be like $35 or $40.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So to see like Hairbanger's Ball, it's like $8.
Yeah, that's fair. So, that's fair. Yeah. I will say I do like their strategy, and me and Tommy will be doing a live Stand By Your Band that is an anti-COVID rally.
For all bikers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people are like, wait, this is a live podcast? And we'll be like shushing them the whole time. Like, no, no, we got to get the audio. It's got to go on the Patreon. Speaking of which, the Patreon, well, $3 a month.
I'm trying to think of what the music would have to be at a wait, you said an anti-COVID or pro-COVID? So meaning that's a good point.
They think it's a hoax. But I guess here's what we could do. Is go to we could make a pro COVID rally where it's people who believe in the virus and think it's good. They think that it's actually what it's doing is helping the world.
I'm looking at a picture of the fans, and it is wild. There is hundreds of people. There is everyone looks exactly like what you'd think they look like. A lot of Brett Favre looking dudes, and fat Brett Favre looking dudes. And, not a mask in sight. It is wild.
Do you see anywhere in the photo a person of color?
Oh, heavens no.
No way. They probably, I wonder if they're even like allowed. I don't know. Maybe.
Who knows?
I don't know.
I don't know. Jeez, you think there's like a diversity program within the biker community? I've seen like there's a black bike crew that rides along the highway in Pennsylvania that I've, like been around
been running
before.
With for a while.
I've been running with that crew, and I think they're pretty cool. No, but I was surprised because I was like, "Oh, I guess you don't see that very often." It usually feels like it's a racist organization, even though I don't think it is an organization. I think it's just people who like motorcycles.
Yeah. Which would probably be fun if I knew how to, if I had balance, maybe
let's get
it would be
in
fun.
There are so many things ruined by I don't have balance either. I'll never be able to surf. That's all I ever wanted
not.
To do. I think should go. I think us three should go surfing when this is all done. It could be fun. So Smash Mouth, fix it, fellas. Come on, clean it up.
There was one more thing I wanted to bring up in this article I was reading about it, which the article said some fans of the band found it irresponsible. The fans aren't the Smash Mouth fans aren't the responsible. It's other people who found this irresponsible.
That is truly insane. I'm shocked that I'm disappointed in you, Smash Mouth. We just talked about them, and they have a lot of hits. It was a fun ep. Who defended them? I'm it's slipping my mind now.
Graham, dude from Stop Podcasting Yourself.
Oh, that's right. Graham Clark did it. That was great.
I forgot your name for a second.
No, he's a good man. I put you on the spot. I forgot who did it altogether. We gotta have him back on. He's gonna do.
It's weird that I
are you
went
pissing
so
right now?
Huh?
Are you peeing? What are you doing? It sounds like you moved to the bathroom.
No, I'm trying to get a Band-Aid, but I couldn't find one.
This is what the Piss Freaks have been waiting for since the inception of the podcast, Alive Your Nation.
I my finger trying to break ice apart. I know, this sounds like I'm like from like the Little House on the Prairie era where we have to break our own ice. But what I was going to say is it's funny that I went so full-throated on Jason Mraz when I acted like on that podcast that we'd never done Smash Mouth. I don't remember doing Smash Mouth, but that it is worse.
Yeah, and it was recent too. It was like just like a couple months ago.
I think what it is about Jason Mraz is just it's just so it just sounds exactly like what music and like commercials sound like. It's like it's just there's nothing there. It's like so void of anything. And I think that's what hit me was that like I didn't realize it was this light and airy. It's like too much.
Yeah,
it's almost like if Jack Johnson were somehow less hard. Like it's weird. I don't know
when Jack Johnson couldn't make me more hard.
No, right. He is hot. We should just do a podcast of the hot guys in music.
Yeah,
you know?
Who do you think is the hottest guy in music, Jared?
Well, does Michael B. Jordan sing? Because
no,
that's my answer.
Come
if he
on.
Does.
No, you got to go with the musician.
He's the hottest person on earth.
Yeah, he's a hot guy, but he's not. Make him sing a song before you can say this. I've never heard the man sing. Victor Oladipo sings.
John Bon Jovi. He's pretty hot. John Bon Jovi. Yeah.
All right.
He was.
Fair
he
enough.
Still is. I don't know any new. I don't know who's like everybody I listen to is like 90.
Yeah, that's fine, but they can still be hot. Age.
The guy
don't
from
be
the
ageist.
War on Drugs is maybe hot. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
What about Kurt Vile? You think he's hot? He's kind of weird looking hot.
Yeah,
he looks
he's
like
actually
Ryan Donahue.
The singer of the War on Drugs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. Tommy, what do you think? What do you? Who
well,
you
I'm
got?
Looking. At, I'm looking at an LA Weekly list of the hottest male musicians of all time, and I'm shocked by what they put. As let me give you the top five really quick because I'm pretty shocked by almost all of these. Number five, they put Bruce Springsteen.
Wow. He was hot.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's true.
That album cover where he's wearing the yeah.
This is when is this from?
1984. I don't want to scroll all the way.
Fair enough.
Number four. Here's a hint. He was one of the guys from NSYNC.
Oh, shit. Is it JC?
Yes, JC. It's Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
Number three. Here's a hint. Some people think of him as the king.
Elvis Presley?
Nope. It's JC again. It's Elvis Presley, number three.
Weird.
Okay, number two, I want you guys to guess. Number two and number one, I'll give vaguer hints, non-joke hints. Number two, there was a movie that he was in that he wrote the whole
Prince?
Soundtrack for. Yep.
There we go.
He's like 4 foot ten.
Yeah, he's still sexy, though. You
he's
know?
5'2", yeah.
He is sexy.
He's a short king.
Yeah.
He's the short prince.
Mm-hmm.
And number one died in the last 5 years.
Beethoven.
He was hot. Some of those picks. I'm,
yeah. God, his damn. Wig was his Wednesday wig was real hot.
Died in the last 5 years. Huh.
On his last album before his death, he worked with James Murphy of LCD Sound System on one song.
Oh,
is it David Bowie?
It is David Bowie.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's completely false, but
isn't that a weird list?
I don't like that list at all.
It's worth the trivia. It's worth getting the credit for getting the question right, but
yeah.
It's not true.
Well, I think the proof is in the pudding. Lenny Kravitz is probably the hottest guy, even though I don't like his music.
That's
much.
True. He's one of those guys that like people like when you hear women be upset that men get hotter as they get older. There's no better example. The guy is just hotter today than ever.
What do you think about this take on that old trope, Jared? I think that's better for women. We're the ones who have to fuck these ugly old ladies.
Oh, my God.
I think that we should hold for edit. no, I'm not. No, it's not.
I just think you said it. So it's like.
Hey, the fans who clamored for me to talk about the music that I like.
Yes.
Know that that was your voice.
I don't know about all that because, and I think here's some proof. So we should get into the premise of this week's episode, which is that a lot of people, there was some clamoring for what does Jared like? He comes in hot every fucking week, taking down the bands that people love and really giving it to the guest. And yet here he gets to sit behind, a wall that he's not letting any of us in. So he's not vulnerable. And now he has to be. So that's what we're doing today. We're going to listen. We're going to hear the songs that Jared thinks are the best of the 80s. Because Jared made a good point, which is that I thought we should do something from the 90s or top five from the 90s, top six from the 90s or whatever. Jared made a good point that he is more vulnerable to music in the 80s because that's when he is in his nostalgic period for music the way that we are with 90s and early 2000s music.
Right. I mean, the majority of, so this all came about during the quarantine. I made a best 80 minutes, which is typically about 20 to 22 songs of every year of the 80s, 1980 to 1989. And it took me a really long time to make each list. And not only that, I then made a best of the whole thing. So it's two songs from each year. And so the list that I gave you guys is a song, either the number one or number two song from each year. And one of the things that I wanted to really sort of make the list diverse is, of course, I have what I believe to be the best song of the decade. But I also have stuff on there that is not necessarily known as the artist's biggest hit. And or I wanted to have a couple like one hit wonder things on there, because, or at least one hit wonder, because I do feel like that for me, the music that I would argue in favor of, that other people would say, you know, that I would be like, that I would have to defend, are the majority of music that I like that isn't sort of known as being great, is one hit wonders of the 80s. Quarter Flash is on my list, and that's a band that existed in a very short amount of time that had one hit, and I think the song is the best song of that year, 83, I think it is, or 82 or whatever.
Let's play that now, since a lot of people probably don't know it. I didn't know it before.
Yeah, let's hear it.
This is sort of like encapsulates what it was like. I think it was at 81. Now that I'm, I should have brought my list with me. I don't have it up here, but my point is that this is me as a young child at a swimming pool in Goshen, Indiana.
Oh shit!
Just like formulating what
were you doing in Goshen?
That I lived there till second grade.
I did not.
So we would go to the pool, you know, several times a week, and we would just listen to music there. And that's where my sort of opinions of music first got formed.
Sure.
Is that why 81. Opinions are so gauche?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Frank Goshen ass. I looked it up. It is 81, and it charted at number 3 in the United States. In this song, the singer finds the strength to leave her man and is determined to do it without getting squishy, it says. Written by the guitarist Marv Ross, it was a regional hit in the Pacific Northwest when the group called itself Seafood Mama. Shuffling of the lineup and a name change to Quarter Flash.
We can't just go past Seafood Mama.
I rescind this from my list. It's gone. That's almost as bad, and I'm sure you both know of Pearl Jam's first name, which is Mookie Blaylock. This is worse.
I did not. Maybe I don't remember if we've talked about that on here before, but I did. Yeah, not know
Hawks
that.
Guard Mookie Blaylock, Oklahoma Sooner. Sooner, good lord.
Sure.
Guard Mookie Blaylock.
Mookie Blaylock. Sure. Guy really had a career year in 99. Let's hear the song. So this is Harden My Heart. Harden My Heart.
Yeah, so I know we do Facebook comments later, but someone did mention Big Country it's called In a Big Country, mm-hmm, by the artist Big Country. And that was the other song that I wanted the same effect with, where it's basically, it's a one hit wonder artist who just has a song that just sort of transcends the decade, even though they really never did anything else. So I chose this just because it was a little bit earlier. And I remember, it's weird, like I remember being at the pool and that song would play all the time. And I just remember it seeping into my brain that I liked just the way it sounded. And it's got a very triumphant beat.
Sure.
Which I'm very, that is something, it's always caught me. Like when you listen to some of the biggest song, you know, the final countdown by Europe is another example of like, it's just a song that like, it just sounds like a,
You said it before, a horse galloping.
It was made to be played in like a big like sporting event in the background.
Whenever I hear a song like that, I remember you saying it sounds like horses galloping about another song. Yeah. I was like, I know exactly what you mean. I got a little trivia here for you. This song is in at least two films, it looks like, but one that you would definitely have seen. Do you know what movie this this song is from?
I mean, I'm sure. I don't know off the top of my head. No, I mean, if you give me a hint about the movie, I might.
Okay, Tommy, do you have any guesses before I start giving hints?
I know because when I listened to this, I had never seen the band name and I'd never seen the song title, and the song was so familiar.
Yes,
like, I must have heard this. So I looked up. It's in one of my favorite comedies of all time.
So legendary comedy, cult comedy film. I'd say that did earn itself a prequel Netflix series. Is that helping you at all there, Jared?
Oh yeah. Wet Hot American.
That is correct. Yes. It's also in the movie Rock of Ages, and Julianne Hough. How do you say that name? H O U G
Hugh? I thought it was Huff.
Huff? That makes more sense. Julianne Huff and Mary J. Blige sing this song in the film Rock of Ages.
You know, probably not a popular thing for me to say, but not a fan of Wet Hot American Summer. I don't like anything where I've said this a billion times, where I don't like something where like you walk into a room and they're just like a bear in a costume sitting down eating breakfast. Like it just doesn't, it's not funny to me. I don't like stuff like that. Like, I don't like where it's like,
that's not a scene in that movie.
You know what I mean?
You can't be like, I don't like when they just have like a tiger and it's like laying in the bed. That didn't happen in that movie.
There's a guy in the corner that has like a knife in him.
There's one scene.
He doesn't have the knife.
It's a parody film. There's one scene where they do that, where it's like they're all on drugs and they go to the city.
I get it.
But it's only one scene.
I do.
It's a similar, like, I know. Joke a minute structure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tommy, you're bald.
And can I just say while I have the floor that I am on that seafood mama diet. Seafood and oh mama, I eat it.
I think we need to edit this out of here altogether with that band name. I cannot stand behind this. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me, maybe
seafood
ever.
Seafood mama. Jared's a fan.
My mom died in, I don't remember what year it was, but.
What is happening?
This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Happening live on this podcast, you unearth a person that likes 1/10 of the number of bands as me, unearths that a band that I'm standing behind was called
Seafood Mama.
Seafood Mama.
So from now on, if you're a guest on this show or if you're listening, you're like, man, I really like this band, and Jared's sure to take them to task. Remember, Seafood Mama. You've got it in your back pocket.
What's that smell? Oh, Seafood Mama just left. She was in the room.
Seafood Jeez. Mama has entered the chat. Let's hear, now that we've heard that, let's hear another song. I think now that we've got
So wait a minute, you need to be careful. You need to let me pick them.
That's what I was going to do that.
Yeah. Okay, well, but you don't know what my number one song of the decade is.
That's fine. So is that number six then?
I don't have the list in front of me. I'm sorry. So
what are you fucking talking about? This is all worried, in your head.
I know, but listen, here's why. Just let me explain. So I left my phone in my room because I would get calls and text messages from different stuff. And I wanted to be in the moment with you guys.
Fair enough. So did you send them to us in the order that you wanted
Let's
them?
Let's just do, so let, do level tear us apart now.
Okay. That's what I was going to do.
Great
so
song.
This is
okay.
Joy Division. I hope this is okay. It's all they had that I could find, but it's the 2020 remaster.
It's fine. Yeah.
And by
with
the
Cardi
way,
Cardi B on it, right?
That's yes. right. Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. 2020. Man, fuck 2020.
Yeah, thanks, 2020.
Yeah, thanks. I can only imagine this song's gonna sound like a friggin' garbage fire remix in 2020. All right, let's hear Love Will Tear Us Apart. Great song.
Well, it's the most obvious song on my list that would make, you know, if anyone, again, there's hardly anyone listening that that knows what I like, I guess. But, you know, Joy Division is, if they're probably my favorite band of all time, I would say, or very close. They're certainly in the top four at worst. And obviously that's the most, you know, that's the closest thing to a hit that they ever made. And also you can hear them turning into New Order, like right in front of your, you know, you can just hear it right there. You know, I actually think that could be the best song ever written. And I say that just because it's a band. There's a big difference to me between a band, or whether you're talking about a comedian or anything else, who has the ability to write a super dark and complex piece of art, who then also can make something so fun and great sounding. It's almost like when you hear a comedian who you love, who tells a dick joke, if that makes sense, where you're used to them just having this sort of overarching viewpoint, and then they do something really silly. And so I would say, if nothing else, I probably have listened to that song more times than any song ever.
Yeah, I love that song. And I would say, as far as, so are you putting that at number five on this list? Is that?
No. I have sort of a different story for each song, but okay. I do have what I believe to be the best song of the 80s. I think it's the second song on the list.
And it's Ronald Reagan's speech about trickle-down economics.
Right. Well, what's really interesting for me in sort of my life in music, what's interesting for me about Joy Division is, even after I started to listen to punk rock, which would have been in about 1992 or late 91, I got Green Day, Kerplunk. And that was basically the beginning of me listening to punk rock. And I remember vividly being in high school and buying Closer, the album that is on, and I hated it. I wasn't ready for it. And so to me, like, Joy Division is such a flashpoint in, like, I remember getting it, if that makes sense, where I had sort of gone back and listen to so much other stuff that sort of prepped me for being ready for it. Because, you know, when you're in high school, you're not necessarily ready for, like, nuanced music. You're more wanting something that's 3 minutes, that's got a hook, you know, that's sort of what you're looking for. At least that was my experience in high school. And so I remember being in college and being like, I finally feel like I can listen to this, and I finally got it.
I feel like that about Radiohead, where in high school I loved Pablo Honey and the Bends, and then when I got to I remember my brother-in-law was like, "You if you like this stuff, you're going to love Hail to the Thief." And I listened to it and I was like, "What the fuck is this?" And then I remember getting really into In Rainbows, and then that kind of got me into like, "Oh, I see what I like about this other stuff now." And obviously,
I mean, obviously Radiohead is, you could very easily argue that they're one third Brian Eno, one third the Beatles, one third Joy Division. I mean, it's just, that's basically in a nutshell exactly what that band is. And so it makes sense that you would feel the same way, because I could see myself, you know, I got into Radiohead in college as well, and I was ready for the weirder stuff, I suppose, earlier, but I wouldn't have been if I listened to it in high school.
Yeah, yeah. It by the way, I just realized, look at this. This is...
Hey!
It's funny because it's not Joy Division. It's the ripoff logo, though, that Surfer Blood
used. I have a Jaws shirt with that. I was in Disney World when they did the super infamous Mickey ears that was only in the park for like 1 week, and I got one, but it was in my fat suit era, so it was a 2X.
Back when you used to wear that fat suit, which I thought was very offensive.
Yeah,
I'm wearing half one right now. I should say,
sometimes
I'm wearing.
The club owner has to do time to set the tone, and that means wearing a fat suit if necessary.
Question this. I'm not questioning. I know you had to do. You had to make some hard choices back then.
A powder blue suit underneath, over top of a fat suit, and they loved it. They ate it up.
That's right.
Here remembers Pez? And they were like, you know what? I remember it. I bought Pez.
It is true that Pez was fucked up. Let's talk about it.
Here remembers Cardi B? Well,
it's happening now. Okay. That was crazy. I feel like nostalgic for the.
Who here remembers WAP?
I don't think that's what we're supposed to be saying.
Italian listeners.
I apologize to Wario. Italian weird era plumber Wario. Is he still a plumber, you think?
Well, that's
Mario
a good question.
A plumber. I don't know if Wario was Wario also a plumber.
I think Wario is just a degenerate.
Only the opposite of Mario in that he's evil, or is it like, is
but he
like,
he does wear the same costume though, like he still wears like the overalls, which is not necessarily the, you know, is that is that something plumbers wear? I don't even know.
What's the opposite of a plumber?
Oh, that's true. Someone who shits in a toilet.
A professional shitter.
Well, no matter what, Wario was offended by my slur. Let's just put it
that way. Sure. It's probably worse that you're calling Italian Americans Warios.
And also, we should point out that Wet WAP is the Wario of MOP.
Yes, that is true.
The nicer version of that.
Yeah, it would be funny to hear a comedian who is like a nostalgic comic, but they have like a mentalist disorder where they have very short-term memory loss, and they're like, man, yes, man, remember 2020? That shit was crazy. Yeah. Remember Donald J. Trump?
I know we're not supposed to talk to the comedian during the show, but you do realize we're still in 2020,
oh,
right?
Man, remember Smash Mouth playing that motorcycle convention? That shit was wild. Do you guys remember quinoa? Do you guys remember my wife's name? I should say we have a regular segment that we have not gotten to yet that we should get to. So as you guys know, we have a regular segment called They Went to Jared, where Jared Thompson, the owner of the beautiful Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana, leaves us a little voicemail shitting on the guest usually and defending them. And this week is not unlike those weeks. We did get a voicemail from Jared Thompson, and here it is.
Hey, boys and the guests, this is They Went to Jared. Just gotta say, Jared's defending his favorite songs of the 80s this week, and I think this is just proof that this podcast has run out of ideas. Who is this for? Nobody wants to hear this. So, good luck. I guess I'll see you next week. Love you guys. Bye.
So that was this week's They Went to Jared. The shortest one we've ever had somehow.
You know, I said this. That's what I said. No, this is for no one. This is for Tommy's girlfriend, apparently, and no one else. No one cares about what I like.
I think people are having a good time. Jared, I think you were wrong in that voicemail, Jared.
Oh, sure. Ay, ay, ay. Oh, my God. Well, I see you had time to record that voicemail, but you gave us 1 minute before with the Zoom link. So thanks a lot for,
Look, here's the problem. If I send people the Zoom links too early, all of a sudden I see them sitting in the waiting room 15 minutes early. That stresses me out. I don't like having that.
I'm 15 minutes early is on time.
Not in podcast world. Not in Stand By Your Band world. I do want to point out, I did ask like 4 people to send in voicemails, and they were all too scared. Tim McLaughlin, Dwight Simmons said he didn't have time. Mitchell Potts said he had to work. I don't believe a word of it. I think they all were like,
so you asked Dwight, Mitchell, and who were the other two?
Tim McLaughlin. That was it. I said 4, but I really lied. It was 3.
Yeah.
But then we got that one from the real guy himself. So
yeah, that's right. I almost sent you a voicemail. It's the same thing you thought of.
I'm 10 steps ahead. That's what people are always saying. Let's hear another song. Let me see here. Let me pull this whole playlist up here. What would you like to hear next there, Jerry?
Let's do Head Over Heels.
Okay. All right. This is the Go-Go's, by the way. Head Over Heels. All right, that's a fun song. That'll get you going. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. So what's interesting about Head Over Heels is that, you know, even though I lived through that era, I was probably 7 or 8. Does one of you have the stats up on that song? I wonder where it charted.
So it charted at number 11 in the states.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, is that like it was not a major everyday hit, and I remember, you know, obviously Vacation and, you know, some other songs of theirs were much bigger hits. And
damn, I loved Vacation.
In my punk rock era, quote unquote, a band called Doc Hopper, who is not something, don't look that up. They're not good. They're not a good band, but they did a cover of that song. And I remember, I know this song from somewhere. And it was only like 20 some years later that I went back and started listening to that song again. And it, to me, is their best song. It is a perfect, you know, 3 minute, 3.5 minute pop song that's fun. It doesn't, you know, it right out of the gate, it's fun for every second. And to me, the 80s, it would be unreasonable for me to make a list of six songs of just men from the 80s, because there's a lot of, the 80s were an era where it was for a short amount of time, there was room for women rock bands in music. And it really was one of the only time frames where there was like a lot of different, like all women rock bands. And so I wanted to include that because it's my favorite song of theirs in a time frame where there wasn't just dudes in like rock bands.
Sure. So. That makes sense. I didn't realize that I knew, I forgot about Vacation. I love that song. That's a great time.
Yeah.
But I forgot about Beauty and the Beat, which is their biggest, let's see, the first album, Beauty and the Beat, was released in 81 and became the first album by an all-girl band to hit number one in America. Their follow-up, Vacation, didn't do as well, but was still a solid showing. Are they the ones that, this is a dumb question because I can't remember the song, but are they the ones with that song that's like, they got the beat, they got the beat, they
yeah.
got, all right,
that's
Beauty and the Beat.
Beauty and the Beat, nice. Yeah. So they had two, like, big, big albums. And then, because I mean, I'm surprised actually that you say that, because I remember Vacation being at least. Now you have to think about this. It was both radio and MTV at that mm-hmm. point. So like a lot of what I took in were videos. And so it could be that Vacation sold not as well, but it was certainly, it was on heavy rotation.
Sure. What do you think about this?
Have you seen the documentary about them?
No, I just found out about it actually last night. I didn't even know about it. I definitely am going to watch it, though.
Yeah, a lot of people have been talking about how good it is, so it made me interested in this band already, and then you put the song on the list. And at first, I did think that it was a cover of Tears for Fears, Head Over Heels. I saw Head Over Heels, mid-80s, you know?
It's so funny that you say that, because there's a bunch of stuff that we're not going to cover that really deserves... Like Tears for Fears in that moment were as good as anything in the decade. REM is not on this list. I don't think there's a Cure song on there, mm-hmm. which they're probably the best band of the 80s. I mean, but that's the thing, is that like there's so many good songs. And again, the list might look different if I was like, these are the six absolute best songs of the decade, because I think The Cure probably would make it. Prince would make it. I mean, nobody could argue that Prince isn't the best artist of the 80s because he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird too, because I was never, a lot of this stuff I didn't really love the first time around, Madonna being one of them. Mm-hmm. And when I've gone back and tried to listen to Madonna now, I mean, it's fun, but it doesn't stick with me the way that a lot of other stuff does. Like, it just doesn't, I don't connect to it. And of course, we can't listen to Michael Jackson. I wish I could, but I can't. I mean,
yeah.
Tell that to Langston.
Can't do it. I know. Well, yeah. Oh my God, that clip that you guys played of Pauly Shore interviewing him was so good.
It's insane.
It's funny.
Insane. What a weird pop culture artifact.
I still can't believe that exists.
So funny.
Speaking of insane stories, I just found this thing about the Go-Go's. That they had to cancel their 2010 tour when Jane Wedland fell off a cliff while hiking and injured her knees. This event made number 9 on Entertainment Weekly's hit list in their June 25th issue. I know you guys are keeping score.
Well, a lot more famous people fell off cliffs that week.
Jesus.
Probably.
Yeah, I guess they played at IU too, which is interesting.
Oh, shit.
I think Brad said that he did a show for them and they were not very nice, but.
Whoa, you're not supposed to tip off that you're in Indiana, Jared. It's like Bob and Tom. It's Bob and Tom rules. You're not allowed to say that you're in Indiana right now. She said it probably wasn't the best idea to rehearse Head Over Heels on the trails. She has a sense of humor about it. Come on. Yeah, I appreciate it. I didn't know that there was a Broadway musical inspired by the group's music.
It's called Hamilton.
It is the
Jared
beat.
Just went dark.
Sorry, hold on. I just remembered that I can look. I just looked at the list. Damn it.
What do you want to hear next?
I forgot I have my texting on my iPad. I'm an old person. So yeah, why don't we do Touch of Grey next?
Okay. Now this, I gotta tell you, this shocked me that this was on this list, because this is from Grateful Dead, and I just didn't know that you were into that sweet green ganja so hard.
Well, I have a story here as well, and I'm gonna be honest with you. I remember I was 10 when this was released, and I remember thinking that the video was just so cool. Like, I remember being like, oh, because they're like skeletons, you know, it's a stupid video now if you watch it now, but at the time I was like, oh, this is fun. So
let's go ahead and hear some of it, and then we'll talk about it after. See the video.
Yes, it's so bad. And, you know, it's really crazy. So this is a little personal anecdote thing. So in the last like 15 or 20 years of my mom's life, she really got into the Grateful Dead. Like, she, you know, she was alive and listened to music when they were making, you know, they formed in what, 65, I think. And you know, she didn't get into them until certainly the 90s. And, you know, we would make fun of her about it because they're an easy target band that, like, you can very easily make fun of. And their fans are just, you know, I would rather their fans than a lot of like current fans of bands. But like at the time, they were really the only sort of like zombie-ish, like, we're going to follow them like wherever they go. So it was an easy target. Plus, I grew up on the beach, and so they were like the most popular band. Like, basically, on the Outer Banks, you're handed a Grateful Dead t-shirt when you're born. I mean, it's just like, so it's such a weird thing that, like, they've become one of my favorite bands. And it's really crazy because I am the antithesis of a deadhead, where if you play one of their live songs, I'll shut it off in one second. I can't stand any noodling, or like, I don't want 15-minute versions of 3-minute songs or whatever.
So cut the carbs, get rid of the noodling.
Yeah, well, so the fact that Touch of Grey is my favorite Grateful Dead song is a dead giveaway that I'm not a real fan, mm-hmm. right?
Because that's their biggest. It was their like only hit. Yeah.
But the thing is that I would honestly say that in the last 5 years, I've listened to that song more times than any other song. It's just a song that if I have time to listen to one song, that's the song I'm going to pick.
Interesting. That's a good. I like that as a concept. Tommy, do you have one of those? Do you have, like, if I can listen to one song right now, this is what it's going to be?
Not off the top of my head. I will say my mom was also a big Grateful Dead fan, so I relate to you in that way. But I hate kind of jam bands for the most part. So yeah, I very much relate to what you're saying.
So the Grateful Dead, if you sort of concentrate on like albums 3 and 4, I think it's 1970. I'm trying to think of the name of the album right before American Beauty. But there's two albums right in a row in like 73, 74, whatever it is, that are like start to finish just masterpieces. And there's things from all of the albums that are good, but they're the thing that I normally hate in music, which is like Queen is another example, where you basically have to put together your own greatest hits to listen to the band. Like, if you put on any Queen album, you're going to be upset like half of the time, because it's just not start to finish. They're just not good. And that goes for all of the Dead albums except for two of them. And maybe my second favorite Dead song is Shakedown Street, which is also not on one of the good albums. And the rest of the album is not good. But it's just, they're both very funky, very, very the opposite of what I think most people are looking for with the Dead. I've gotten the Grateful Dead Dunks, the Nike Dunks.
I thought that was going to be a VHS tape where they had cool
so, Jerry Garcia's nastiest windmills.
I actually have been trying to find a photograph of my mom's ankle because she had one of the Dead bears on her ankle, and I want to do it exactly the way that she had hers. Because, and it, I know it was a yellow bear, but I don't know exactly which position that the bear was in and what color that the other part of it, like the collar is or whatever. So I totally agree that this makes no sense. Like, I'm the opposite of who you would normally think of as a Deadhead. Like, I have a watch. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the number one thing. Is if you wear a watch.
You know that that wrist is reserved for hemp bracelets. There's no space for a watch.
Right. Well, there's no time in their world also. Like, I don't have a rain stick or like a hacky sack or whatever.
Actually,
just real quick on the last point on this, I actually was at their last concert, if you can believe it.
Wow.
So in 1995, my parents gave me a round trip ticket to anywhere in the United States. And I picked Madison, Wisconsin, because I had I had pen pals there, and I didn't know until they ran a label called Rhetoric Records, which actually in that same trip, I saw the Promise Rings like second or third practice ever. Like, they were a band there, and we went to the practice in a basement. And anyway, their job, other than running the label, was traveling with the Grateful Dead and selling shit at the show. So we were at Soldier Field, the old Soldier Field in 1995, outside. They were selling, I don't even remember what they had, like probably bracelets or something. I don't remember. But I mean, we didn't go in. You could hear them out there. And I just remember, you know, my favorite band was Jawbreaker. So I was like, this is bullshit. I can't, I hate this music. I hate the people. But it's a really crazy thing to like think back on that I was at their last concert, because he died like not long after that. Jerry died.
Yeah.
So,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
We got two songs left. We should get to them, because we got to get to Facebook this week because we didn't do it last week.
So let's do Whitney next.
Okay. I'm surprised that that's the order you want to go in, but we'll do that. All right. So this is How Will I Know from Whitney. I'm going to say I think it's maybe my favorite on the list, but here it is.
I think it's a keyboard.
It's gotta be, right? Hold on, I'm gonna skip forward. It's all about her vocals. Ugh. I'm surprised you seem unmoved by this.
Tom's talking to a cat. Asking if they want to dance.
One of the greatest voices of all time. I was talking to Antonia. I was really expecting a big response out of that. She's a big Whitney fan and just couldn't. She started dancing though.
I mean, I think it's the best vocals ever.
I agree. Maybe I think ever. So too. Can I tell you really fast? So, Antonia, this was in the days of MoviePass. There was a documentary that came out about Whitney Houston. I can't remember if I've told this story on the show before, or whatever, I'll make it fast. The only showing in New York was at this theater in Brooklyn. And it was like an AMC or Regal or something like that. Tickets are like $25 or some shit like that. And I have MoviePass, so I'm like, well, I'll just do that. And Antonio's like, no, we cannot risk it. There's only one night this is showing. It's certainly going to be sold out. And it's like a 10 p.m. or a 10:30 p.m. showing. And so we pay, it's like a $50 night of whatever to buy tickets to this fucking thing. We show up, of course, there's two other people in the theater.
Right. Yeah.
They slowly make their way out throughout the movie. One of them is asleep, I think. And it's one of the most depressing things I've ever seen. We get out of the theater at 1 in the morning. I had to work the next day. It was a horrible night, but God damn it, she is incredible. It's I will give her that. We saw it. We were both moved and both very deeply disturbed by the life and times of Whitney Houston. But
y'all remember MoviePass?
For real, though.
Sorry, Tom. I feel like Tommy was waiting to do the same thing. Sorry, Tommy.
I don't get a chance to
show my. You know, I don't get to play this character very often, so I might just jump on your lines. So the thing about Whitney is, again, like you guys have to understand, and I know that you've known me in an era where I would have written her off as this is corny, this is cheesy, and there just becomes a point in your life where you just realize that I don't care what it means to listen to Whitney Houston. It doesn't, it's such a, she's such a great, I mean, the vocals are just impeccable.
The song
is so much fun. And I mean, honestly, I feel like that I put her on here and I feel bad that I mentioned Madonna. Like to me, this is sort of, this is what is my view of 80s, like just a lady in front of a microphone in the 80s. This is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, Janet,
and no one's
really
better.
No one was better at that.
Madonna doesn't hold a candle to that. I mean, Madonna's fun, but that's not it.
I would say Madonna has played a bigger role in forming the music that I like bands and artists that I currently like. Like I'm sure the War on Drugs or, you know, The National or any other current bands that I like probably like Madonna. And they may also like Whitney, but certainly to music like bands or like rock and roll music, Madonna means more. But I mean, and I guess also another thing, I wanted to have like a diverse grouping of bands and artists. Like
sure.
I felt like that it made it, like rather than just having six rock and roll songs, which of course is what I love the most.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I wore a Men at Work shirt because they're also a band that could very easily be on this list. And they are another great example of what it was like in the 80s. Where you have a band not from the United States that just sort of became famous in the music video era, and just was all over it. You know, their videos were everywhere. And honestly, Men at Work, if they had one or two other albums that were great, they would be like one of my 10 favorite bands ever. Mm-hmm. They just really only have like 8 songs that I love.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of other bands and artists from this era, from this decade that really deserve to be talked about, I guess. Anyway.
Yeah. I do want to play this last song real fast, so I'm just going to cue it up, and we'll talk about it afterwards. So this is Jared's number one.
That's right. It's been one week since you listened to me. I'm getting
to the side, and I'm hungry. 5 days since you laughed at me. Now, here's what pisses me off about this pick. It's not even in the 80s, Jared, but you needed it on there so bad that you shoehorned it in.
All right, this is a great time for me to bring this up. You guys, you swear to God that you like that song. You're not kidding when you say.
When did I say that?
Yeah, well, no, what are you talking about? Tommy's never said that.
Who?
Tommy's never said that.
I don't think that Tommy.
I'm Tommy, by the way.
Who? Great plug for Tommy's album. Who's
that
Tommy?
Is funny,
named after this very podcast episode.
Tommy, you're saying that you are not a fan of the band.
I'm not a bare naked ladies guy. No. I like some of the songs, but that song is just a novelty. You know, it's I would never say it's a good song.
So you're saying, and all right, I appreciate you saying that, but let me ask you this. And I assume you mean like Brian Wilson. I don't know what song you mean is what you kind of like, but that's what they all sound like. Mm-hmm. It's all someone who would fail an open mic, who would get booed off the stage at an open mic, that tried to figure out a way, how can I be funny some other way? I know how to play guitar and I have a voice that's not out of tune like the guy from Third Eye Blind. So how do I force people to listen to my comedy some other way?
Mm-hmm.
That's that thing.
Hard disagree. I think that they're the two funniest people on the planet.
God damn.
This has been a great way to end Jared's positivity.
I do actually.
I had to force it out of him somehow. No, there. Let's play this last song because we are deep into this pod. And then we'll go to the Facebook. So the last song here is from NXS. It's Don't Change. That's the list.
I believe that's the best song of the 80s. And I think that one of the reasons, like one of the things that really catches me about the song is I don't have it in front of me, but I don't know where it charted. I don't know if it even did chart. It was the most interesting fact, in my opinion, of track lists in the 80s is that it's the last song on an album that was not even a big deal when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everyone that's listening to this podcast, even if you don't know the band or you don't know music from the 80s, knows that 99% of the time the hit from an album is going to be within the first 3 to 4 songs on the album. I mean, unless it's Thriller and the whole album is hits, like most of the time you front sequence load. It.
Yeah.
And now,
charted at 80, by the way.
Exactly. And the one thing which was probably the biggest hit on the album is the first song. That must be what they thought would be the song. So to me, the thing, NXS to me is a perfect example of what the 80s means to me, in that I remember hearing their earliest stuff when I was really little. And then by the time I really kind of understood what I was doing, I got to be 10, 11 and really kind of was making my own choices in music. That's when Kick was released, which is maybe my favorite album of the 80s. Now that we can't listen to Thriller, it's probably my favorite start to finish album of the 80s, and it's perfect. And so, but this would be the best song on Kick, and it is not even I don't even know if NXS, if they had a greatest hits collection, if it's even on there.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of one of the things that I love about the song is that it's exactly what I imagine a kid like a teenager in the 80s, sort of riding his bike, listening to a Walkman, sort of being free in the summer, just sort of thinking about their life. That's the song that I think of when I think of that. And there's bands like the Psychedelic Furs that sort of have that same kind of vibe to some of their hits, and they could have very easily been on here. But this is what I think of when I think of summer in the 80s.
I love it. I have a few song facts here that I think are pretty interesting that that I want to give you here. One of them is that obviously it's a pretty impactful song. Bruce Springsteen played this at a show in Sydney, Australia in 2014, and again later in New York. I don't know if you knew this. This is the last song that they played live.
No, so I didn't know that.
Here's what's going to piss you off about this. This was the last song that they played live. They used it to close their set at Perth Arena on November 11th, 12th, wrapping up a tour as opening act for Matchbox 20.
Yeah, I mean.
Lead singer Rob Thomas joined them on vocals during the performance.
That is a perfect Stand By Your Band ending to this.
The crowd was shocked when NXS announced from the stage that it would be their last show. They confirmed the news in a statement 2 days later. You think it was like they didn't even agree on that, and the second Rob Thomas's vocals hit, they were like, it's got to end. It's over. I like Rob Thomas.
If we had a narrator for what we're doing on Zoom during the podcast, would have said Thompson holds his head in his hands as the news is being told to him that Rob Thomas joined NXS on stage.
It started out moment
with Mama Food Stuff. What was it called?
Seafood Mama.
Seafood Mama.
Incredible.
Awful.
A quick thing about NXS is that show, Rockstar NXS, I don't know if you watched it or if you're, but it's such a crazy idea to me. In the mid-2000s, so their lead singer had passed away, and in the mid-2000s, they had a Mark Burnett.
Had passed away?
What, didn't he die?
He hung himself jacking off, Tommy.
Oh my God.
He hung himself jacking off me?
Yeah, I can't believe you don't remember this, Tommy. Tommy lives a wild life. This happens to him too often.
Persona is built upon this, Tommy. I don't know why you wouldn't know.
So what I think is so cool, it's just so tasteless to do a reality show to find your new singer when that had happened.
Yep.
And especially by Mark Burnett, who a lot of people think is responsible for Donald Trump being our president.
He's got the tapes. Moment.
Yep. Yep.
He's been saying the N-word and shit.
Yeah, give us the tapes. I don't think that anyone would even
Mark
care.
Burnett.
Come on,
but
Mark.
I think knowing about that reality show, because that came out when I was 14 or 15, like when I was starting to get really into music, and I think that made me think of them as a shitty band. The fact that they would do this reality show, because it didn't seem like something a cool band would do. But then listening to the song was great, and it makes me want to listen to them more. I just like had a distaste for them based on that show, I think.
I would also, I know I've said a lot of stuff that's off the top six, but I would kick myself if I didn't mention the only reason I didn't put it, it's not on the playlist at the club because it's not on Tidal, but it's Eddie Grant. It's 1983, Eddie Grant. And it's called Electric Avenue. And for some reason, it's not available on titles. I don't know. But my point is that like that was very similar to a couple of the other songs where like that's one of the first songs that formulated my views of music. And Eddie Grant is an interesting, just if you read about him, like he was a really weird dude. And the song very oddly got on the radio and for some reason is now lost, I guess. I've got it on iTunes. I bought it years and years ago and it's in my iTunes, but it's not available on Tidal.
Damn.
So.
Well, it is time for us to go to Facebook now. I do want to say really quickly, I was a little surprised. So you were talking about the song that you would go to if you have 5 minutes, you're like, I can only listen to one song. Mine is from the 80s and it is Talking Heads, This Must Be the Place. Do you hate them? What's your deal?
Oh, no. They honestly, like as we went into this best of the 80s list, they made as many lists as any band did of my years. And they, when we, when the discussion was brought up, like who's the best artist and who's the best band of the 80s, they, I think, were either my choice or I had the Cure. It's one or the other. It really is a coin flip.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. We do have, let's see.
Also, my favorite song of the decade of theirs is the same year. It just was my third favorite song of, of the year. They were number three a couple years.
Okay, yeah. Good to know. I mean, it's tough. Yeah. It's a whole decade, so we gave you quite a task. Right. Okay, so John Griffin says, hopefully the Cult will be discussed. Any thoughts on the Cult?
No.
Fair enough. Gwen's uncle says, oh, thank goodness, the content we've all been waiting for. Who angry faced that? That would be Jared
Thompson.
That was me.
I did. Some dog is not giving, that was mean. That's a mean thing to say.
What do you mean? I think she was being serious.
She's closing out the comedy fest tomorrow night and Thursday night.
Well, if you listen, I'm assuming it's sold out, right?
No, that air is over with, Tom. We're past that. Those words sold out. That is not a thing in our vocab.
Okay, well, this comes out Wednesday morning, so
get in there. Sunk Dog, who was not being serious when she wrote that, then she comes here.
Let's see. John Stigall says, the one time Jared played what he thought was the worst, and I liked it and told him so. That was awesome.
It must be when, I guess it must be when I played the playlist for Stand By Your Band. Mm-hmm. I the only thing I can think of that he meant.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm not sure.
Was when
yeah.
I put a playlist together of the bands that you guys were going to talk about.
Yeah. Emily Blackwood says best of Harry Styles mix.
She's just making fun of the fact that I love Harry Styles, which I do.
All right, well, there you go. Bill Moore says, I don't care much for the Beatles 80s stuff. Is that some he's trying to get after. I think he's ripping you. Yeah.
In fact, it's funny that you mentioned that. Someone wrote and I responded to, and then they deleted it, where they said, if he doesn't mention, and I don't remember what band it was.
Yeah.
If he doesn't mention blank, then fuck his opinion. And right. I was like, Jesus Christ. Well, yeah. Anyway, I tried to respond to it because it was a band that I definitely like.
Yeah.
So it was either REM or Talking Heads or The Cure. I think it was The Cure. In fact, and which they didn't make the list, but they should have. Yeah. I mean, they very easily could and should have.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like we said, there's so many bands to, there's so much music to cover over a decade. I was also surprised not to see The Cure, but, it's all bangers. So, what do you want? Miranda Britton says, I think We're Alone Now by Tiffany is the greatest song of the 80s. If you're a lesbian, if you're straight, it's probably Africa or something. Honorable mention, Heaven is a Place on Earth. Now, I don't really appreciate that shot at straight people, Miranda. Although, Africa is great. And I was tempted to play that instead of the Bare Naked Ladies song.
But I do like Africa.
That's what I knew.
To her point, all three of us like Africa. Probably.
That's the problem, is I was going to play it, and then I realized, oh, but you do, I think, like that.
I do like it. I do. And as I wrote in that comment, both of those songs are on my best of those years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last couple. Oh, I guess there's two more. Matt Alonzo Morning says, spoiler, the entire playlist is just Putting on the Ritz by Taco over and over.
Love it. And I also love it. It's fantastic.
And Kevin Frolic says, I say this in complete sincerity. Cyndi Lauper's She's So Unusual is an absolute start to finish masterpiece. Better than Thriller. Yeah, I said it.
See comments about the Cult.
Fair enough. And see food, Mama.
No! No!
We got to wrap it up. I mean, Tommy, do you want me to go first? You want to go first?
I can go first.
Or do we want to give Jared his final, you know?
Oh, yeah, Jared, give your final.
Your final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Well, I was just
going to
say, I do have a breaking news announcement. And Brian Regan is going to be at the Comedy Attic next weekend.
Can I tell you?
I'm opening?
I heard Steve Rogers is opening. And I found out about this yesterday, and I've never been more angry in my life.
With who?
Caitlin Palufo told me about this yesterday. She doesn't want me to say this because she was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have told you. But I'm
pissed.
Who did
you say was opening?
Steve Rogers.
I don't know who that is. Because
that's Brian Regan's opener.
Very funny man.
Kelly Collette was supposed to headline that weekend. And so I was trying to get her as the opener so that we didn't have to move it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. I didn't even. You knew more. You knew first. His agent doesn't know this.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's happening. That's what that's what I understand to be the case.
Yeah.
And,
so we're putting
I think old Palouf right dog's after- going to be there too. I don't think she's. I don't know about the show thing, but she just wanted to go along. It's going to be a nice little time. I mean, Brian Regan, people.
I mean, it's my favorite comedy album of all time. So
it's so
this
good.
Is like this is my number one, literally the number one thing that we've never been able to do.
I've never been more upset to not be in Bloomington to see something. It's
honestly
insane.
Like I sat on a conference call, like an agent who you know, Tom, let me thinking that there was going to be this like crazy great moment for the club. He let me dial in on a conference call when they're talking about Brian Regan's tour. This would have been like 2013, yeah. Maybe somewhere in there. And they lead with the first thing you're going to do is go to the Comedy Attic. And this is, you know, they were really pushing him to come and they said great things about the club. And then we find out that their minimum requirement was 400 seats.
Jesus.
So like, I have to sit there and listen.
Yeah.
I listened to the whole conference call knowing that.
Yeah, I know who that was.
yeah, you're right. He did the same thing
to me. Yeah, he did the same thing to me in my whole career. Anyway, we do need to wrap it up. So I'm just going to go. I mean, it's a 6 out of 6. What are we going to do here? It's the best of the year. You know what? Actually, fuck it. 5.5 out of 6.
No!
There was one song that I was like, that's fine. And you figure out which one it is, but, I gotta go. Tommy, what are your thoughts?
It's a 6 out of 6 playlist. I'll give it a 5.99. Used to be an asshole. And if you have any pictures of Jared's mom's ankle, send them my way.
Oh, my God. Tommy, what the fuck? Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Jared, what do you give the playlist?
I'm going to also give it a 5.99. I don't know. So a little bit, something about Head Over Heels kind of struck me the wrong way. I was thinking it was going to be Tears. I wrote the Go-Go's, but I meant Tears for Fear. So I'm going to go 5.99. You played the wrong song, even though I wrote it. But this was fun. I mean, honestly, I've already scheduled. We're going to do the same thing for the 70s.
Oh, is it? You've already scheduled it?
Yeah, I already scheduled it. Yeah.
Did our schedules not factor into
this? No. I mean, I'll do it by myself if I have to. But and I, you know what? This was so much fun. I'll do the 90s, too, if you really want to.
That's what I want to hear.
I'm doing the thing where, like, at the end of the weekend, we had a bad weekend. Pat Dixon was hit.
Oh, my God.
Sure. And he was like, "Hey, let's get a new week on the books." And he brings the books back, and I'm like, "Sure, let's get a week on the books." And then I cancel.
Oh,
so
boy.
My point is that like you might not want to do this, but I had fun. So if you want to do it, I'll figure out a 90s.
We got to do this again soon. Yeah,
I had a lot of fun.
It was very fun. Get on the Patreon, people. Go get tickets to the Comedy Attic. You're doing virtual shows, right? Too, right?
Yeah, I mean, not for the Brian Regan show, but yes. In general, yes.
Okay, so get on that.
And the Kelly Collette weekend did get moved to September 11th and 12th. I know that you guys are friends with Kelly.
Yeah, and somehow that's
and
still
so.
The worst thing to happen on 9/11.
I know.
JK, check out Kelly.
Doesn't
at the
get
club.
Bumped twice like you did for Mike Birbiglia.
Hey, that's what caused me to change my name. It all worked
that's
out.
True. That's true.
Yeah, get on that. Buy Tommy's album, Who's Tommy, which has been...
Watch the whole... I put the whole footage of the recording, the full hours on YouTube.
Hell yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so you can watch that right now for free. Check it out.
Do
you have a hat on, though, at the show?
No hat. I am wearing a nice suit.
He looks fantastic.
I can't stare at your bald head.
He looks fantastic.
You're more bald than I am.
Yeah, you're the baldest man I've ever seen now, Jared. Yeah. This is crazy. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Like I said, get on the Patreon, $3 a month, and it gets you a bonus episode every goddamn week. What a win for you! And
this week's
going to
be a dramatic episode.
Yes,
too,
it will. We have
Kevin
to confront Kevin.
To us.
Yeah, you're going to want to listen to this one because we're both angry. We found out Kevin talked shit about the podcast, and we don't know what he said, which makes it even worse. Because now I'm left to imagine what he said. Oh, Tom, he doesn't know shit. That's the sort of things he's probably saying. Anyway, we're gonna confront him with it this week. So listen to this week's Patreon episode this Friday or Saturday, whenever we drag his ass down to record. All right, thanks for listening. Thanks again, Jared. Keep it crispy. Yep. Bye.
Bye.